Sit down and buckle up. It's time for the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Welcome to a brand spanking new episode of the Pirate Monk Podcast. Hey, say, I'm your friend Nate Larkin here with your friend of mine, Aaron Porter. It is, we're recording this in the February, I think. We are in February of 2024.
I just realized if we were like a real podcast, there'd be a button someone pushes and it would have been like a spank and a baby crying. Instead, I'm here clapping and pretending to be a baby. But what is this crap?
Oh, man. And we're even farther apart than normal. Allie and I, for the next 6 weeks, have decamped to Florida. So
yeah, but it was really good that you waited until after the cold snap to leave for the warm weather.
I know. And I got down here for the cold snap. I had to bundle up this morning for my walk.
But that's all right. Are you in Amelia Island as usual?
As usual, different digs this time. We're not on the beach this year. We've settled into a little bungalow beneath some live oaks in one of the older parts of town, and it's snug and it's nice. We're having a good time.
I don't know why, but
I'm going to be busy, huh?
I don't know why. I went down there to officiate my dear friend's daughter's wedding about a month ago or so, and Abby and I went. And I don't know why I never thought of Florida as having so many oaks, but we went to some plantation area with gardens, and it was some of the most beautiful oaks with the hanging moss. And
isn't it gorgeous?
I thought it was like Georgia looking, or Mississippi or something. I don't know.
Well, we're not that far from Savannah or Charleston, for that matter. I can almost spit to Georgia from here. So, yeah, it's a beautiful part of Florida. But I'm missing, a lot of work is happening at the harbor while I'm gone.
Yeah, we are getting closer. We are shooting for the first intensive, I haven't got confirmation about it, so I'm not going to say anything, but, mid-May, sometime in the mid to late May, I'm hoping to line up one of our friends from the show. And so if you want to be a part of that inaugural boat launch at the harbor, keep it marinific. Just consider that, because really this is our test phase. We've got a couple interesting ways that we think the harbor can be used. And it's all dependent on how much you listeners and Samson folks want to use it. If you ultimately don't want to use it, then I guess that's not what it's going to be used for. So stay posted and really think through it, because I think we've got some unique opportunities for you to just take some steps in your growth and steps in community. I think the weekends you spend there with the folks you spend it with, those will become your brothers in your walk for a very long time.
All right. Well, I think by the time this episode airs, the Super Bowl will have happened.
So, yeah, who do you think is going to win? Who's in it? It's the I know it's the Chiefs.
There you go.
Uh-huh.
I am so far out of the loop, Aaron. This is not a very macho thing for me to admit, but I am so far out of the loop that I don't know who's in the Super Bowl.
Well, let's just guess. I think it's the Chiefs against the Yankees.
In a game of sportball.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's terrible. How is it that I don't know who's in the Super Bowl?
Okay, do you know what would be more fun? I wish the Super Bowl, they would have like a spinning wheel that decides what sport they have to play for the final football game. I would watch that. Oh my gosh. That'd be so great. Maybe it's volleyball. Maybe it's beach volleyball. They start handing out like those little spandex things everyone has to wear for some reason to play volleyball. That'd be amazing. I'm in.
I wonder what David Murrow would think of this conversation. David Murrow? He's the guy who wrote Why Men Hate Going to Church.
I don't know if he'd feel good about that. But let's try to get him on the line. Hold on a second. Let's give him a call Let's see if we can find out his thoughts on what's happening these days. Just hold on, listeners. We'll be right back.
You know, listening to podcasts like this one is certainly helpful to your recovery. And so are the many books that we recommend. But recovery is not something that any of us can do by independent study. None of us can recover alone. We heal in relationship. So it's crucially important for you to find a recovery community, a Samson Society group, or a Pure Desire group, or a Celebrate Recovery or other 12-step program somewhere where you can bring your real self and say the real truth. And there's another resource that you can draw on, one that's been extremely helpful to me over the years. In those times when my recovery has plateaued, or when I've gotten stuck, or I've started to lose ground, I've found that there's nothing like time with a highly skilled, well-trained therapist or recovery coach to get me moving again. Now, sometimes that's taken the form of a weekly counseling appointment. At other times, it's meant attending a week-long or a weekend intensive. If you're ready to take a dramatic step forward in your recovery, let me suggest LifeWorks Christian Counseling. These are good folks. The Hunters and their staff get addiction. They understand trauma, and their approach is both biblically and scientifically sound. They work with individuals and couples. They're based in Madison, Mississippi, but they can work with you anywhere, remotely, through Zoom. And at various times throughout the year, they also run weekend intensives for Samson guys. To learn more, go to lifeworks.ms. That's lifeworks.ms. Or give them a call at 601-790-0583.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. How fortunate we are to have with us this week as our guest, the fabled David Murrow. If you've been around as long as I have, then you surely recall a book that caused quite a stir. Maybe, 15, 17, 16. What year did Why Men Hate Going to Church come out, David Murrow?
2005, Nate Larkin.
Okay. David Murrow is with us. You're not in Alaska right now, are you, brother? Are you still in Pennsylvania?
Still in Pennsylvania, yeah, working hard.
Okay, all right. Although you are an Alaskan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, I won't deny it.
Right. I remember the book, loved the book. I was a proponent. I was a cheerleader for that book. You were really kind of decrying the feminization of the church. It was the same time, David, that I was noticing how I was feeling uncomfortable when I walked into the Christian bookstore, because it was all lavender and scents, and it was...
Amish women on book covers.
That's right.
A lot of Amish women on book covers.
It was very clear to me that I was not the target customer.
No, I had a kind of an epiphany moment. I was attending a Presbyterian church, and one Sunday I looked at the chancel area, and the pastor was wearing what looked like a dress. And he was serving at a table covered with a lace doily, and on the walls were quilted and felted banners with ribbons and flowers, and all the volunteer opportunities involved children and cooking. And
yeah,
I suddenly realized that the target audience of my church was a middle-aged woman with excess time and excess money to give to that institution. And so I blew the whistle on that and became persona non grata in the main line, but a hero to evangelicals everywhere.
Now I have to ask you this, because I just realized a person I know, I'm going to be very vague, I believe read your book at that time. He was a pastor, and so he parked a motorcycle on the stage behind where he preached as the application of those principles. Did he successfully understand your book?
Well, sure. I mean, let's say you invite a male friend of yours to church and there's a motorcycle on the stage versus a fresh flower arrangement. You know, who are we? What message are we sending? A guy's going to immediately think, okay, this church gets me. And as long as it doesn't stray into, you know, ridiculous macho posturing, I think male symbols in church are a very good thing. There's no reason why our default decor in the church should be grandma, or the mm-hmm. look of the church should be grandma.
Unless you believe only grandma is coming and that only the women are forcing the men to come, which shouldn't be the high goal, right?
Well, and it's so much more than decor. I mean, it's the language. I mean, what's the number one metaphor we use today for Christianity? A personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Now, that phrase never appears in the Bible, and yet it's become the chief way we describe discipleship. Now, which gender is more into relationships, men or women? They certainly, women buy books about relationships. They buy magazines about relationships. All their favorite movies are about a relationship. So, you know, it may be true that we are in relationship with God, but by adopting metaphors that are more appealing to women than men, men slowly get the impression that this is something for women and not for them. So we have to be very careful when we add to the scriptures, when we describe the things of God.
And, you know, I knew when it had gone too far, when we had finished singing one of the worship songs. Maybe it was Lord, I Lift Your Name on High. And then on the projector, they put up a slide that said the last song was brought to you by My Doll. And I was like, yeah, obviously, this is just gone too far.
Well, the nice thing about that song is you only have to sing it monthly.
Oh, yes. Come on, David. That was great.
Now, speaking of going too far, I believe that you can go, and I don't think you disagree with me. It is possible, if I understood your great book, The Map, mm-hmm. it is possible to go too far in the other direction. I have been a speaker at what I could only describe as Duck Dynasty Church. Mm-hmm. And it was everything but semi-automatic rifles on the stage. Mm-hmm. It was everything was camouflaged. There was boats and four-wheelers mm-hmm. on stage. It was camo netting, and I felt as because you know. I'm not a metrosexual by any stretch of the imagination, but because I don't, you know, live to hunt, I felt uncomfortable in that church. And I felt that the message may have veered slightly off course.
Yeah.
Your reaction?
Well, I mean, if you're living in Missouri or Louisiana and you're trying to reach Bubba, mm-hmm. then, you know, go full Bubba. I don't have a problem with that. You're not going to, uh-huh. you may not catch many Nates in the net.
Okay.
But, you know, Bubba needs a church. This is why we okay. have cowboy churches. This is why.
Right. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. We have churches that meet in archery ranges. Just a couple weekends ago, I went to a place called Fight Church that meets in a gym.
So, oh, nice.
Yeah. As long as the gospel is proclaimed, and mm-hmm. I don't care who we target with our decor or the look. The most important thing that men need to understand, and this is what I brought out in the map, is that there is a way of following Jesus where we are able to balance the masculine and feminine. And that's by following the pattern revealed in the Gospel of Matthew.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk about the map. Mm-hmm. Subtitle is The Way of All Great Men. Mm-hmm. Fascinating book. So why don't you thumbnail it for us, David?
All right. So after I'd been speaking on this topic for some time, and about 90% of the guys, this feminization of church, about 90% of the guys were like, yeah, you're all about it, Dave. But then when I would lampoon things like holding hands and hugging and, you know, all the kind of the feminine things that we do, about 10% of the guys, you could see they were visibly uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And guys would come up and say things like, you know, I cried like a baby when I met Jesus. That wasn't unmanly. Or yeah. I love giving my brothers a hug after our Bible study. Or you know, they would defend these practices that most guys would consider feminine. And I began to realize that, yes, of course, there is definitely a tender side to our walk with God. We can't just opt out of, you know, turning the other cheek or showing affection to other men because we're guys. Mm-hmm. So I dived into the scriptures, hoping to find a solution. How was Jesus able to balance both the masculine and feminine side? Because sometimes he's the Lion of Judah, other times he's the Lamb of God. Sometimes he's picking up a whip and clearing the temple. The other time he's weeping over Jerusalem or weeping at the death of a friend. And I found the most fascinating pattern in the Gospel of Matthew. In Matthew chapter 1 through 7, Jesus is almost completely lamb. Everything about his life, from his birth, his virgin birth, the vulnerability running for his life, the his baptism, this is my beloved son, and then he preaches a message, bless the meek, turn the other cheek, do not resist an evil person. Everything about the first act of Jesus's life moves him in the lamb direction, what most guys would consider feminine. I gave this first journey a name in that book. I call it the journey of submission, and it is the very foundation of our walk with Christ. If we do not learn the lessons of submission, we discredit the body of Christ, because what we do is we try to serve God in our own strength without a basis of love, kindness, meekness, gentleness, all those sorts of qualities. In Matthew 8 through 25, an entirely new Jesus appears. I call him the Jesus of strength, and I call it the journey of strength. This is where he's casting out demons, he's rebuking Pharisees, he's walking on water, he's in miracle overdrive, brutal in predicting, mm-hmm. A horrible future, persecution, betrayal, death. He makes fun of his own disciples. I mean, he is a full main lion in the middle of the Gospel of Matthew. And then finally in Matthew 26 through 28, the lamb reappears. He says nothing. He doesn't defend himself. He allows himself to be arrested, tortured, crucified, and he becomes the perfect sacrifice. And so these three journeys, the first journey of a man's walk with God has to be a journey of submission. The second is a journey of strength. And the third is a journey of sacrifice. You have to walk all three journeys in the proper order, or you will mess up your Christian walk. And I go through the Bible and I show you all the guys in Scripture who did it right and the guys who did it wrong, including your favorite, Samson.
Samson. I love that part of the book. Yeah,
we're going to page 131. We're going right to Samson. Samson was a guy who did not walk the three journeys at all. He was never submitted to God. He served God in his own power, as he thought best. He was never submitted to God. His heart was never tenderized by God. Then he lived in strength his entire life. And we've all known Christian men who don't have tender hearts, but they have the right doctrine. Yeah. And they're out there fighting for God, right? And righteousness.
Right. Yeah.
But their hearts are just destroyed. And that was Samson. He was out there fighting for God. Mm-hmm. And so he never walked the journey of submission. The journey of strength was all he ever was. And then you notice the last 2 minutes of his life, he walked all three journeys. He finally repents. He says, God, give me back my strength. And then he sacrifices himself for the nation of Israel.
Mm. Let me ask you two questions. I think especially for the men listening, the journey of submission is perhaps the most confusing. And this leads to the questions. One, when we hear the word submission, many men think, well, no, that's the woman job, forgetting that everybody in Scripture is called to submit to God. Men are supposed to submit to those who are in authority over them, governments, employers. Like, everybody is called to learn submission. It's not a woman thing alone. And so how has that confused it? And secondly, submission carries with it for many people a qualitative aspect, that to submit means I admit I'm less than, forgetting that Jesus himself considered equality with God something that he wasn't going to grasp, but submitted himself. So it can't be qualitative because Jesus participated in it. So how do we help? Because I agree, that's got to be the first foundation of us humbling ourselves, being humbled, that if we come in strength before that step, we're in a lot of trouble and the people around us are in a lot of trouble. So talk to me more about submission.
Here's how I explain it to men who have that very question. In fact, we're recording this only a few days before the Super Bowl. Now, let's imagine, and Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, let's say Patrick Mahomes had walked onto the field and said to his coach, Andy Reid, I've got the game plan. I'm going to do whatever I want out there. Okay. No, Patrick Mahomes submits to his coach, Andy Reid. Andy has the game plan. There's nothing unmanly about submitting to your coach. What it does is it puts all the players on the same page and results in lots of touchdowns and extra points. When we join the Army, you immediately submit to your commanding officer, to your drill sergeant. You learn to submit to authority. So submission is the manliest thing you can do, especially when we have a coach, a commanding officer named Jesus, who has our best interest in mind and wants to take us to greater heights. But the only way you're going to reach the heights of the Super Bowl, or the only way you're going to win the battle on the battlefield, is if you are submitted to your commanding officer or your coach. Do you understand the metaphor here?
Absolutely. Yeah. You're kind of describing that submission gives context to the sacrifice that will be made that leads to victory.
Well, and you're skipping a journey in here. When you once you've submitted, I use the example of a horse in the book. You break the horse. That's the journey of submission. Then you work the horse. That's a journey of strength. And then finally, you send the horse out to stud to reproduce in the lives of future horses.
I so thought that was going to be you get made into glue at the end. So yours is better. That's why you wrote the book.
Yeah, well, sure. If you're made into glue, you can stick. So I guess we can add that on.
No, I see this part also. What I'm seeing is the recovery journey. What I see is a lot of guys, they recognize that they got a problem. They got an addiction problem. So going for help, our first instinct is to power up. How do I power up to overcome this compulsion? And well, that leads freaking nowhere.
Right.
Nowhere. Right. Recovery begins with surrender. Accepting, I can't do this on my own. I'm going to have to do it with the help of a higher power. I have to submit to Christ and to the body of Christ, take my rightful place within the organism, and now I can start to gain strength.
Yeah, I mean, the first step of the 12 steps is we admitted we were powerless,
right,
against alcohol, and we need the help of a higher power. So you're absolutely right. Any sort of health, any sort of success in life begins with submission. When you're a kindergartner, you have to submit to your teacher. You have to learn your plus one plus one. I mean, everything in life that's worth having begins with submission. Mm-hmm. And you know, as I was saying earlier, the most terrible men in the church are those whose hearts are not submitted to God, who've never been tenderized by God. You know, Exhibit A would be Mark Driscoll. Mark Driscoll was a brilliant Bible teacher who led many men to Christ. But he immediately went right into the pulpit as soon as he was saved. Mm-hmm. And he never had those tenderizing experiences that gave him an underlying heart of that relied on God. He relied too much on Mark. He was into the journey of strength too fast. So he's been quite pummeled and quite tenderized. And a lot of his newer stuff is definitely more reflective of the three journeys. He's less full of himself. He's still very confident, still very bombastic. But you can tell God tenderized him, and he is preaching a much, much more orthodox gospel than he had at before.
So here's a scary thing for me. The message of the journey of submission in the church is often a tool, a fulcrum by which people who want to control other people use it to control other people. Mm-hmm. And so learning who to submit to or how we submit, how we walk that journey seems really important, or else we feel like it's just our duty to go find a Mark Driscoll who will be happy to tell us who we're supposed to be and what we're supposed to do. So how do we walk the journey of submission in a way that is healthy to our heart and not hurtful?
Well, Aaron, our churches are full of men who never learned to turn the corner and do the journey of strength. You know, this is what Paul Coughlin calls the Christian nice guy. Mm-hmm. You know the prayers, you sing the songs, you raise your hands, you have that good warm feeling, but you're not dangerous. in a John Eldridge way. You know, you're not wild at heart. So, that's where a lot of churches, that's quite frankly, that's where a lot of churches would like to keep men, because you don't want a bunch of lions wandering around in the narthex, tipping over the mission fundraising tables, fashioning a whip, et cetera. we've all been mauled by a wounded lion at church. Yeah. So we tend to want to neuter all the lions, but, actually a good lion, an Aslan figure who has gone through submission and has turned the corner into strength, is the most valuable tool in God's hands. So, there are definitely those out there who would use submission to control men, but it is a necessary part of our spiritual journey. It is the foundation,
right?
So, of our spiritual journey.
Are there practical things you can say to a person that wants to engage that journey of submission, but needs that discernment to know when, like Esther or Abigail, submission is inappropriate, and so saying no is still, you're still on the journey of submission, you're just saying no to inappropriate demands for submission?
Yeah, I mean, I really haven't explored that in depth. I don't see the journey of submission as becoming a spiritual yes man or even submitting yourself to a particular teacher. I think you always have to test the spirits. You have to discern, and you don't want to become isolated. You don't want to be the fanboy of any particular teacher. But I think if you're a part of a group of good, solid, godly men, mm-hmm. and you take their advice and they call out, oh, by the way, that Kool-Aid they're trying to get you to drink, you probably don't want to do that. Then you would probably do better to have those sorts of advisors around you.
Nate, do you have any thoughts on that? I'm curious, because you've seen the ins and outs of this.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a very controlled environment, and I became so allergic to control, so hypersensitive, this feeling that somebody is going to try to just swallow me and reduce my options. That I rebelled against even self-control, which is why recovery was so difficult for me in the early stages. I had a sponsor in 12-step recovery, but he was a sponsor in name only, because I was so afraid of being abused. I really was my own sponsor, and I took him under advisement, but there was no way. And the only way that that pattern was broken was by repeated failure. And I had to relapse. Like, I just end up face first in the mud time after time after time before I finally gave up and said, okay, I am going to have to trust somebody else. Someone else's perspective on my life. I can't handle this on my own. I can't, you know. And it felt like, in a way, it kind of felt like dying to do that. But I don't think I would ever have been able to become helpful and useful as a sponsor of Silas myself, had I not gone through that door.
And let's throw out, before we turn the corner to strength, that submission does not equal silence, does not equal not having a voice. Even when it speaks of women having a gentle and quiet spirit, that gets changed into, so be quiet, where no, it's a quiet spirit. It's about, I feel so secure and rested in Christ that I'm not anxious. I'm not having to push for. And so if at any point you lose your voice because you think you're being submissive, you're not being submissive. You're in a cult. But now, David Murrow, can we change this to, we go to the power. And there's probably some men that feel like, oh, good, I can do the submission thing. I'm good at that. And they get to, oh, all right, it's time to step up and step into the power that God has put in you. And now they're very terrified. I don't know how, whereas other guys had to leave their power to go to submission. How do we turn that corner? What is going in the journey of power look like, especially for those that are afraid?
All right, well, let's do another biblical example. Moses. Moses, hotshot, son of the king, grows up in Pharaoh's court, one of the few young Hebrew men of his age, because all the babies were killed. a very lucky guy. One day, in a fit of social justice activism, he sees an Egyptian beating a Hebrew slave, and he makes the big mistake that this is the biggest mistake a man can make. God needs my help. Those are the four most dangerous words a man can say. God needs my help. And so what he does is he kills the Egyptian, buries the body in the sand. Well, word gets around. And then Moses does a 40-year journey of submission in the desert. Now, instead of hanging out with the wise men in Pharaoh's court, he accompanies the sheep and the goats all day long. He is humbled for 40 years. Well, then one day he sees a burning bush. And God calls him to a journey of strength. And what does Moses do? He does exactly what most Christian guys do when God calls them to do something adventurous. He gives them five excuses. Mm-hmm. He says, God, I can't talk. They won't believe me. He gives God every excuse in the book, right? Most guys get caught on the left flank of the mountain. They never make that turn to strength. Well, God sends him a helper, a guy named Aaron. An armor bearer. And so Moses screws up his courage. He goes back to Pharaoh, and you've heard it all. The Passover, the plagues, the parting of the Red Sea. It is an amazing journey of strength. And in fact, prior to the journey of submission, Moses killed one Egyptian. But after he had gone through submission and turned to strength, he killed the entire Egyptian army. So you can see what a force multiplier this is when we go through submission and turn to God, allow God's strength to flow through us.
Yeah, with the underpinnings of humility.
There it is.
Through the submission.
He's no longer the hothead warrior who's out there to do good in his own power. He's simply submitting to God as he learned in his first journey. And God's strength is flowing through him, and miracles happen.
Yeah. And he's following instructions at this point. He's following God's instructions. This isn't...
He's not... This was not his idea to go confront Pharaoh.
Right.
And he didn't create the miracles. All these things, he's simply an instrument in God's hands.
Mm. Isn't it funny how those who have gone through the humiliation and humility process become reluctant heroes so often, and that's kind of important, because I feel like all of us who have tried to be strong first, we were not reluctant heroes. We we chose the title of the comic book, and we chose our spandex outfits and our superpowers, and it just doesn't work out very well. At least I can only speak for me. And it has not worked out for me, and I'd look shit in spandex, I'll tell you that.
All right, but then there comes a time for another turn. So talk to us about the journey of sacrifice.
All right, now I'm going to introduce one more Bible character, a fellow who shares my name, King David, has one of the most beautiful journeys of submission of all time. He defeats Goliath, but he doesn't let it go to his head. He's anointed as king, but he does not take the throne.
Yep.
He's under attack from Saul, and he says, I will not raise my hand against the Lord's anointed. Saul goes into a cave to relieve himself. David has a sword. He could take the throne like that. David says, no. Submission, submission, submission. Beautiful picture of a man who refuses to take matters into his own hands. Finally, Saul dies. He becomes king. He unites the 12 tribes of Israel. His record in his early part of his reign is a beautiful journey of strength. A warrior, poet, total man. He completely blows the third journey. If you read the last third of David's life, it is an absolute train wreck because he refuses to walk the journey of sacrifice. He does not invest in the next generation of leaders. He does not designate one of his sons as his successor. The one who was scheduled to follow him is involved in a sex scandal. He has barely survived a sex scandal with Bathsheba, and now here comes another one with the rape of Tamar, so he tries to cover it up. Then Absalom rises up against him. The final scene in David's life is instructive. he's lying in bed next to a beautiful girl named Abishag, and the text says she's a virgin. Now, if David had any potency left, she would not be a virgin. He is completely spent at this point, okay? And he's shivering in bed next to this girl. And Bathsheba comes storming into his bedchamber and says, "There is yet another man in the streets proclaiming himself king. Will you not designate Solomon as your successor?" David's hanging on to the journey of strength until the last minute, until the last possible second. And finally, he trembles out of bed, blesses Solomon, and then boom, he dies. The third act of David's life is so tragic because he did not pour himself, he did not sacrifice himself and pour himself into the next generation of leadership. And it's a cautionary tale for these men who hang on too long, for these pastors who hang on to their pulpits too long, for these athletes who play one season too long. They can't let go of the limelight. And we've got a real crisis coming up in the church as these pastors, these men who've done it so long, are not designating their successors. And we have these men who are not investing in their families and not discipling other men.
All right. So on a personal level, here's my question. I got to walk through these paths in some ways that I'm grateful for when I was a young man. And then I feel like I got to a place that you're describing, David, and in a very real way, I had to go back to step one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a great linear journey, but it also seems like sometimes it might need to be cyclical or renewed. Talk to me about that for the hope of those that feel like they have missed the step in the journey, that they were on the journey, but now here they are still trying to hold on to something that just isn't what's happening inside their hearts and minds.
Yeah, well, in the book, The Map, I actually draw a physical map to represent these three journeys. And the map is climbing a mountain to the pinnacle of manhood. And anybody who's ever climbed a mountain knows it's very easy to fall off either side, to fall off the flanks. And that's the devil's plan for us is, you know, you complete a journey and he wants you to go straight off the edge. So the other thing in light of your comment, let's go back to the example of the horse. You break the horse works, and the horse goes out to stud. At any point, the horse may throw a rider. He may forget the lessons of submission. You don't go out and shoot the horse. You gently take the horse back and say, all right, where did we forget how to keep a rider on your back? Where did we forget how to plow this field? Where did we forget how to round up cows? This is the way God deals with us when we forget the lessons that we've learned in our earlier journeys. He doesn't take us out and shoot us. He doesn't send us to the glue factory. He gently and calmly reminds us of the lessons that we have learned before. And it's incumbent upon us as his followers to repent and recognize when we've forgotten either the lessons of submission or strength and go back and redo and rebuild. But as I said, we serve a God who's not going to take us out in the field and shoot us and reject us, send us to the glue factory. He's going to give us another lesson, another try. And that's one of the reasons I love Jesus so much, is because he's always ready to forgive and redeem.
So don't give up. The journey is still there.
Oh, yeah.
I have one question, and then I want to move to another topic if we can quickly. Most of the listeners to this podcast are male, but not all. We have a good number of female listeners, and I'm wondering, the subtitle is The Way of All Great Men. Is the journey different for women?
I've been asked that many times, and I just don't know. I don't want to make something up. Mm-hmm. The Bible is replete with stories, lengthy narratives of heroic men, mm-hmm. men who have walked these three journeys, and there are men who haven't, as I've described. Yeah. The stories of heroic women are not usually told in great detail.
Right.
So yeah. I could not conjecture whether a woman's journey might take her in the strength direction first or I just can't, I couldn't tell you.
Okay. Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
That's a great answer, by the way.
I love it. Yeah.
We approve that. Absolutely. And I love that it's not just that there aren't a lot of complete women's stories, not as complete as the men ones, but then you have the Deborahs or the ones that get pulled out as the example of a thing. You're like, but those are like so few and far between. It is a right and fair answer to say, man, the test group is much smaller.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's Ruth, there's Esther, there's Deborah. Ruth and Esther have their own books. But compared to the number of men whose, you know, the span of their lives are revealed in such detail, you know, really hard to tell. I'll give you one more Bible guy who walked the three journeys successfully was the Apostle Paul. And like Moses, he started off as a murderer, mm-hmm. An accessory to murderer. And he said those four fatal words, God needs my help.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Jesus came to him. He was blind and then he saw. He spent 3 years in the desert. By the way, anytime you see anyone in the Bible in the desert, that's the journey of submission. Mm-hmm. And then finally, he walks, of course, a great journey of strength. And his journey of sacrifice, he lists no less than 11 men and implies about 15 more who were his direct disciples. So he was constantly investing in the next generation. And I think Paul is probably our best example of a non-divine character whose example we should follow as we walk the three journeys, submission, strength, and sacrifice.
Beautiful. All right, Nate, what turn did you want to make?
Well, listeners, the reason I knew that David Morrow was in...
I feel like you want to talk about Paint a Scarf at this point. And I understand, because I thought that's what we were talking about for the whole time, because we had an inventor here today. All right, go ahead. They can look up Paint a Scarf. Listeners, that's your Easter egg. Check it out. It's a good product.
Okay.
All right, go ahead, Nate.
I don't even know about Paint a Scarf. I know about something else that maybe you don't know about. The reason that I knew that David was in Pennsylvania was that I was with David in Pennsylvania just a couple of weeks ago. When I was there with Sam Black and Matt Wenger and Troy and Melissa Haas, recording some instructional videos around porn and sex addiction and recovery for pastors and church leaders, David was the producer/director of that whole thing. And while there, I got a look at his next project, which is very exciting. He's there filming a bunch of parables. Talk to us a little bit about parables, will you, David? I love the project.
We're working on a new project called Man Time. And we are the newest thing in men's ministry is actually the oldest thing. There have been a lot of different men's ministry video series since Robert Lewis introduced the first one, Men's Fraternity, about 35 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they've done a lot of good, but they have two weaknesses. One is they tend to attract the older guys. And two, there's nothing to share online after the meeting. So we're creating a series of very short, modern parables. These are not the parables of Jesus, but these are new parable-style teaching videos that we show to guys. And then they have table discussions. And just like the disciples, we don't tell them the meaning. They have to discuss it. What does it mean? Well, maybe it means this. I don't know. Maybe it means that. And then we show them an explanation video. And so Man Time is going to be releasing worldwide in the summer of 2024. And if anybody would like to learn more about it, they can come to my website, davidmorrow.com, and I can send you a link. We also have the domain mantime.men, where you can go directly to the ministry. But I think it's going to be a very exciting way to make men's ministry meetings more like the experience the disciples had with Jesus. And most importantly, every guy has something he can share with his family or share online, because online is now the marketplace of ideas. And the church is just getting killed in the online world because, you know, we tend to preach the gospel in 40-minute monologues, and our competitors are preaching their false gospels in 40-second clips. And so this is going to be an opportunity for guys to share peer-to-peer and share parabolically some of these ideas and concepts that will help them become great followers of Christ.
Fantastic. Awesome. Give those websites again where people can track what you're doing and where these things are coming out.
Yeah. Okay. So my main website is davidmurrow.com. And there's also a page on there that's 3journeys.com. If you want to go straight to the map and see the actual map drawn, I've got a 7-minute video on there. I'll draw the map for you and show you the 3 journeys that these different guys went through. So that's either davidmurrow.com or 3journeys.com. And then if you're interested in this new parable-based discipleship regime that we're doing called Mantime, you can see that at mantime.men.
Okay.
Right. Mantime is one word, M-A-N-T-I-M-E, mantime.men.
Well, David, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. It has been a joy. I really enjoyed spending time with you, and you were such a help to me. I talked last week on the show about my meltdown there when I was at Live Up Studios, my encounter with anxiety, and you were very, very helpful in the process of getting me through that. I'm very grateful. And well, I'm glad that after all these years, we got to actually spend some time in the same physical space.
Yeah, we've been friends on social media for a long time, but it was a pleasure to spend time with you, Nate. And God had me walk the journey of submission with you. I approached you in gentleness, and it paid off. So I got to walk journey number one right alongside you, and it was a real blessing to do that.
See, this is so great. I didn't know I was going to get to meet the person from that story. I didn't know David was the person in that. So, that's even better. David Murrow, thumbs up to you. Thanks. Thanks for your service to my buddy.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Nate. It's been a pleasure being on your podcast.
All right. Well, listeners, stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. Do you know what I find really interesting about the first part of that conversation about the white men hate going to church? Yeah. I am remembering that era of pastors and elders and people structuring their services, kind of wrestling with those thoughts. How much has changed in our culture, in the way we talk, in the way we think from that time when we're moving away from doilies and trying to address Harleys on the stage to 2024? Like, it feels like a world away from now. Mm. I mean, don't you think? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just not in the churches that are still in that same conversation. It just feels like, wow. Our conversations are different. What we're addressing in churches feels different.
I agree. Absolutely.
Anyway, I was just a thought as that was happening. It made me feel old. Like I've gone through some church cycles here. It did, but I love those 3 journeys. I'm excited to engage that thought process a little more. That was great.
Yeah. It's a wonderful book. The book is called The Map, The Way of All Great Men by David Murrow, and it's available now. It's published by Thomas Nelson.
So we have all of the stuff set up for this November's annual Samson Retreat. It is going to be the third weekend in November, but don't worry, it's still a week and a half away from Thanksgiving, but it's not the first weekend this year. It's the third weekend. In North Carolina, right now the link is in the Noble Briefing, but if you don't get the Noble Briefing, I don't think there's any other link for you to get to it. So we're going to try to put it in the show notes for this episode and upcoming episodes. Good. But one feature this year that they worked out is if you want to sign up, and you know, it always feels like, wow, I get to the month before and that's a big expense. They've set it up where you can do like a $20 a month payment plan. So by the time you get there, it's paid for and it costs you $20 a month. And I know that is way more forethought than I put into almost anything. But it's also super reasonable. And this year, I think, is about $100+ less than last year. So we're trying to make it so that money is absolutely not an issue for anyone, so that you can come and hang out with your brothers. It's going to be so fun. We're going to be doing Silas groups this year, so that you're walking with a group of men and talking through the stuff you're processing.
And we're in a new location there at Camp Dixie.
Yeah, like way out of the deep south, we're finally going to Camp Dixie. That's great. I'm confused, but hey, I was born and raised a Californian. I clearly don't understand this stuff.
Oh, it's going to be a great week. A great weekend.
So check that out. Are there any other?
What else we have on the calendar? Yeah, we've got.
Do we still have any openings for the England Walk?
There are still a couple of openings for the England Walk.
Okay, give a brief description real quick for those that definitely should come with us walking in England.
Yes, we start out, I believe, on the 8th of June. We spend a couple days in Oxford. That's where we're going to do an Inklings tour, hang out in the places where C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien hung out. We'll start there. Talking about the path. We're going to work our way through the path over the course of the week. So we start on Saturday. On Monday, we catch a train, as you should in England.
Yeah.
We're going to catch a train from Oxford into the Cotswolds. It's just most beautiful. Oh, I just love you. So we're talking stone cottages with thatched roofs and a pub in every village. And from there, we will walk from village to village on ancient footpaths and talk our way through the path for a week. It's going to be awesome.
So we will also try to provide a link for that. I say try because I have no control over all of this. But hey, Sean, can we include these links in the show notes?
Actually, Sean doesn't even do the show notes anymore. We have another pirate monk who does the show notes. And unfortunately, I cannot at this moment pull up his name. Thank you, brother, who does the show notes.
In my defense, brother, I never knew it was happening. So surely I wouldn't have forgotten. I'm bad at names. It's not Nate's fault. Plus, he's old, you know? It's not his fault.
We are a ragtag bunch, and it's amazing everything that gets done in the Samson Society, because pretty much everything is done by volunteers. Somehow it happens.
It's a beautiful thing. Well, also, if you want to send us your thoughts, your questions, send them to piratemonkpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And I think that's about it for today.
Well, then, until next week, I guess, I'm Nate.
And I am Esmeraldo. It's like Esmeralda, but with an O, so it's a dude.
Okay. And we are your pal on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Underlay!
The Pirate Monk Podcast is produced by members of the Samson Society. Send your feedback or questions to piratemonkpodcast@gmail.com. Please give us a 5-star review on iTunes and share the podcast with a friend. For more information, please visit SamsonSociety.com.